Against War, Drought, and Hunger, a global coalition to prevent a food crisis. Three features of today's unordered world are converging to create a devastating food crisis. Russia's war in Ukraine is disrupting agricultural exports from both countries. The enduring blockage of the Strait of Hormuz is restricting fertilizer shipments. And this year's El Niño, a sporadic warming of the Pacific Ocean generating widespread knock-on effects elsewhere, could be the most drastic on record, causing widespread droughts. As this year's United Nations General Assembly, UNGA, draws near, global food affordability and availability are at risk, and with them millions of lives and global security. This looming catastrophe coincides with an absence of political leadership, including in multilateral institutions. As recently as 2022, a coalition of leaders convened by the UN Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, managed to curb a food crisis. Today, even that convening power is missing, with potentially more dire consequences. Political leaders face a test. Amid war, climate crisis, and diplomatic turmoil, is it still possible for groups of states and institutions to confront the direst humanitarian urgencies? This note argues that a solution could still be found, requiring a comprehensive global effort on several fronts. Drought, support for farmers, the Black Sea, the Strait of Hormuz, and access to fertilizer. In all of this, Europe should lead. The emerging calamity. Global food prices are already almost 75% higher than their 1999 lows. Almost 2.2 billion people face food insecurity. The coming trio of threats to food supplies will make that worse. A super El Niño will likely bring heat and drought to southern Africa and significantly reduce food production in South and Southeast Asia. It may reduce already falling rates of wheat production, which is expected to fall by 3% globally in 2026-27, 8% in the EU, 12% in Australia, and 19% in Argentina, and drive up rice prices. Meanwhile, the Strait of Hormuz remains blocked. It is the largest single conduit for the nitrogen fertilizers most directly linked to yield, and is the export route of about half the global supply of sulfur, a vital component of phosphate fertilizers. Thus, about one-third of global seaborne fertilizers cannot reach fields, especially afflicting smallholder farmers in sub-Saharan Africa, where fertilizer prices are highest, and South Asia. All this may well generate wider ripple effects lasting years. Rising prices and exhausted government subsidies in states like Malawi are deterring fertilizer use, which could depress future production. Historically, El Niño events are associated with protectionism. India has imposed export restrictions hitting countries in Southeast Asia, which in turn raises prices, lowers margins, and curbs investment in future output. There are two bright spots among the big global agricultural producers, Ukraine and Russia, which together generate 30% of the world's wheat exports, 20% of its corn, 60% of its sunflower oil, and from Russia alone, 20% of its fertilizer. But their two war has brought disruption. Russia's attacks on Ukraine's highly exposed grain and port infrastructure cut the latter's exports by 75%, and more damage has already been done in August. Ukraine has been striking Russian port facilities and ships in the Black Sea and Sea of Azov, taking over 90% of Russia's grain export capacity offline. In 2022, a UN and Turkey-facilitated arrangement mitigated a similar crisis and kept Russian and Ukrainian grain and fertilizer supplies flowing through alternative routes. US and EU agricultural aid in sub-Saharan Africa also helped. In 2026, by contrast, multiple challenges stand in the way of a similar solution. Logistically, war damage to infrastructure and low water levels in the Danube make it harder to get grain out of the region. Diplomatically, the UN is approaching a leadership transition. The US has turned against the organization, and there is no global focal point for action, preventing the worst. European leaders, including those of the UK and Ukraine if it wants, should move fast to convene a coalition of states influential among the combatants in the Iran and Ukraine conflicts, India, China, and Turkey, especially, and of states especially exposed to this nutritional crisis, states in sub-Saharan Africa and South and Southeast Asia. This coalition could draw on arrangements from the 2022 deal, as well as new links between UN agencies and initiatives like the CGIAR Agricultural Innovation Network. It should seek to transcend political and diplomatic tensions, bringing leaders or at least ministers together on the margins of UNGA in the week of September 21st. The joint initiative should have the following core elements: a program to distribute food relief and technical assistance on drought-resistant agriculture and soil fertility, headed by an advisor to the UN Secretary General and supported by UN agencies. Such assistance works, one led by the CGIAR, reached almost 6 million African farmers in 2023-5, and to cite just one example, in Malawi delivered maize yields 64% higher than the national average. This will need to be funded. The World Food Programme's conservative pre-El Niño budget needs for 2026 should be covered, only 34% met so far. But the initiative should also marshal resources for the medium-term response to the Super El Niño and its geopolitical intensifiers. This would include a financial mechanism to subsidize efforts by states to mitigate higher input costs and shift agriculture to drought-resistant strains. A CGIAR-led sustainable productivity growth push should have a budget of $500 million over 3 years, with the first portion delivered fast enough to support the upcoming planting season. Coalition members should strive for a partial ceasefire between Russia and Ukraine, to include an end to attacks both on ships carrying grain and on ports and infrastructure identified as central to grain, fertilizers, and inputs. Its European participants especially could undergird this with support for Ukraine's farms, including mobile storage units, fertilizers, seed, and repairs to infrastructure. Some of this work is already underway. The program should also involve an agreement with Iran that fertilizer shipments be allowed to transit the Strait of Hormuz. Several attempts have been made in this direction already, with no results to date. Two elements should be added to make it more attractive. First, Iran's own fertilizer and urea exports and fertilizer shipments from other states should be exempted from the U.S. blockade, and Iran's imports of wheat and rice should be secured. Second, an expert-level group, akin to that used in the 2022 Black Sea arrangement, would oversee implementation and resolve disputes quickly and locally. Part-time negotiators must also secure practical arrangements to ensure results, not just agree on principles. Unpalatable, but necessary. This effort would still face a series of obstacles. It would require multiple states to cross their red lines or at least revisit established policies. There is a good chance that the two wars driving up food prices in Ukraine and Iran will escalate in the near future. Russia especially would likely be reluctant. The states most affected are a disparate and often antagonistic group. There is no single capital or organization capable of appealing to all the decision makers needed for a comprehensive solution. But within this adversity dwells a constructive role for European governments. Along with the UN Secretary General and a core group of middle powers including Brazil, Egypt, Kazakhstan, Mexico, and Turkey, they can bring together the states most exposed to the crisis as the core of this new group. Along with partners from across the UN system, such as the UN Conference on Trade and Development, the World Food Programme, and the Food and Agriculture Organization, they can amplify those countries' voices and help marshal the resources needed to make the program outlined above meaningful. Besides winning over the most affected states, the next step would be to bring on board those states with influence on combatants in the Ukraine and Iran conflicts. This means especially China and India. The UN Secretary General can play a particularly vital role there. Europeans can also help by appealing to Chinese and Indian claims to speak for developing countries in general. In turn, Brazil, India, and South Africa can invoke Russia's claims to share that mantle as fellow members of the BRICS formation. Europeans can also play a crucial role in recruiting Ukraine into the program, even if the latter's commitment to any ceasefire would depend on Russia's position. They could see this anti-hunger coalition also as a way to help rally support for Ukraine in the global south, as the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, did in 2022 with his Grain from Ukraine initiative. In the Strait of Hormuz, meanwhile, the coalition could present free passage for fertilizer exports as a means of trying out the Omani-Iranian technical plans for opening sea routes. It would present this as a win-win proposition. Iran would get some of its exports to global markets. The U.S. would be supporting its Gulf allies. And both parties and their European interlocutors might see the long-term geopolitical benefits of a stabilizing anti-hunger act along these lines, for example, curbing mass migration. This initiative is intended to be a no-regrets effort. Even if it takes time for the combatants to join, and it will, supporting farmers and global trade will improve the food situation. Progress in addressing hunger should provide an opportunity to highlight the further contribution that progress in the Black Sea and the Strait of Hormuz could bring. This sense of momentum may bring some or all combatants closer to agreement. It will take leadership from both the most affected states and from wealthier countries to achieve this defiantly cooperative act in a world of unorder. But its very defiance, its assertion that common action is still possible, makes it all the more valuable. The European Council on Foreign Relations does not take collective positions. ECFR publications only represent the views of their individual authors.